This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga, and here is what's coming up.
The cessation of hostilities agreement is a major achievement and step forward, saving lives, changing lives. The guns are silent. As the fighting has stopped, human rights violations have declined.
That was U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken praising the ceasefire agreement between Ethiopia and its Tigray region. Also, at least 17 children were injured when a sinkhole opened under their classroom in Zimbabwe. Police and demonstrators clashed today in Dakar, Senegal, ahead of a court case involving opposition leader Sonko. And women say it's increasingly unsafe to live in South Africa. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has met with top Ethiopian leaders in an effort to repair damaged ties after the brutal two-year civil war against forces in the northern Tigray region left an estimated 500,000 people dead. Deepening the peace and promoting a transitional justice policy which would seek accountability for atrocities committed by all sides in the conflict were high on the agenda. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
A traditional Ethiopian coffee ceremony provided a good start to Secretary of State Antony Blinken's meetings with top government and Tigrayan leaders in Addis Ababa, with all sides eager to repair ties strained by 2 years of a grueling civil war. Blinken took a moment to reflect on the lives lost and the pain many endured.
The conflict was absolutely devastating. Hundreds of thousands killed, widespread sexual violence against women, millions forced to flee their homes, many left in need of food, shelter, medicine, hospitals, schools, businesses, shelled, destroyed. The cessation of hostilities agreement is a major achievement and step forward, saving lives, changing lives. The guns are silent. As the fighting has stopped, human rights violations have declined.
Blinken said African leadership, Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, and Tigrayan leaders all deserve credit for the cessation of hostilities reached in November, supported by the United States. And he brought some good news, pointing out that the U.S. is the biggest bilateral donor of aid to Ethiopia.
Today, I announced an additional $331 million in emergency food and humanitarian assistance that will reach billions of people, millions of Ethiopians affected by conflict, affected by drought.
One expert told VOA that normalizing bilateral ties after the brutal civil war will be a process and not a switch. But the United States is in a unique position to help. Joseph Siegel is Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, National Defense University. He spoke to VOA via Skype.
And I think that's where the United States has a very critical role to play. As a trusted actor, as a guarantor, it can ensure that Tigrayan interests are being considered as both sides move forward. It can, you know, ensure that Ethiopian sovereignty and Ethiopian interests are also being respected.
Another expert told VOA that Abiy is eager to normalize ties and get back into a U.S. duty-free trade program, but she urged caution. Sarah Yeager is Washington Director at Human Rights Watch. She spoke to VOA via Zoom.
What he has been doing is downplaying the atrocities that have occurred by all warring parties, but also his own by his own direction in places like Tigray. And so he is looking to get economic relief from the United States. He is looking to get other partners around the world interested in being donor nations, in having free trade, in bringing businesses back to Ethiopia.
Blinken said that with peace taking hold, Ethiopia is moving in the right direction and the U.S. shares its aspirations, but is not ready to welcome it back into the U.S. trade program right now. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Mozambique President Filipe Nyusi says the death toll in the country from Cyclone Freddy has jumped to 53, with nearly 50,000 people displaced by the record-breaking storm, which killed more than 225 in neighboring Malawi. Charles Mangwiro reports from Maputo, Mozambique.
In a state TV address Wednesday night, President Filipe Nyusi said the cyclone-related death in Mozambique were caused by drownings, electrocutions, fires, falling walls and trees, and lightning. Nyusi said the city of Kilimani was the worst affected by Cyclone Freddy, with 50,000 people displaced from destroyed and damaged homes to more than 130 centers with temporary shelters. He said more than 1,500 classrooms and 52 clinics were destroyed in Zambezia province, the most affected. In an audio recording of the address sent to the media, the Mozambican president said 250 security personnel were dispatched for rescue operations and nearly $4 million earmarked to support recovery efforts. He says for this, Mozambique will have a permanent post-cyclone reconstruction office. Secondly, says Nyusi, an assessment of the damage caused should be immediately carried out and followed by the mobilization of internal and external resources for the recovery or reconstruction of the affected districts in the province of Zambezia. Nyusi say the record cyclone had cut roads and power to some areas, and continuing rains were hampering search and rescue efforts in the six affected provinces. Freddy hit Mozambique for a second time Saturday, becoming one of the longest-lasting tropical cyclones ever recorded since first making landfall in February in Madagascar. The cyclone, which has since lowered in intensity to a tropical storm, dumped heavy rains across Mozambique and Malawi, causing severe flooding that swept away roads and bridges and buried houses under thick mud. Tens of thousands were left homeless and scores remain missing, meaning the death toll is certain to rise. Charles Mangwiro for VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
Funerals are being held in Malawi as the government and aid organizations struggle to get aid to survivors of Cyclone Freddy, which battered the country for days. VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson spoke with reporter Lameka Masina, who spoke from an evacuation center in the Naocha Elementary School in a Blantyre neighborhood hard hit by the storm.
And even clean water, although there are just one bowser from the from UK Aid, which is providing clean water, but they say it is not enough at the moment. So the general view is that the situation is still bad. And one of the contributing factors is because the roads are very impassable. Only the 4x4s are getting in here. So those people who have maybe assistance, some sort of assistance like clothes, those communities surrounding them, they can't come here because the roads are too bad.
He says the government is still trying to reach those harmed by the storm.
Now the number of displaced is at 19,000 and more, because the houses are still collapsing, so the figure would still rise. The number of casualties are now at about 255. Those who are dead, these are the people who have died so far. But because now, as I'm talking to you, rescue and search operations are underway, and the military is still recovering some dead bodies from the house that have been destroyed so far.
President Lazarus Chakwera yesterday visited three evacuation centers and attended the funeral of 28 storm victims.
So thereafter, President Chakwera declared 14 days of mourning for those who have been killed. He said these 14 days they will be used to maybe coordinate aid efforts. For example, he asked the government organizations, some aid agencies, maybe during this period to be distributing, to intensify their efforts in assisting those who have been displaced.
Lameka reports President Chakwera says he will ask neighboring Zambia to lend Malawi helicopters to get aid to cut-off areas. And Lameka says many Malawians are mobilizing to help their neighbors, with a group of Land Rover owners carrying supplies to evacuation areas. At the center where he was, dozens of 4x4 cars we are coming in with aid. At least 17 primary school children were injured today when their classroom collapsed into a sinkhole near two gold mines in the city of Kwenkwe, about 200 kilometers southwest of the capital. A French news agency, AFP, says photos on social media showed a hole opened under the classroom floor, swallowing up children, desks, chairs, and school bags. An investigation is underway. The news service says school management had complained about illegal mining activities underneath its grounds in the past. Authorities say they had ordered the school closed and were trying to find alternative placements for its students. The International Crisis Group says more than 1 million people in Zimbabwe illegally mine for gold, which accounts for about a third of the country's exports. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. Police and demonstrators clashed today in Senegal's capital, Dakar, ahead of a court case involving opposition leader Ousmane Sonko, who has gained widespread support among the West African country's youth. Sonko is being tried for allegedly defaming a minister. The case could determine whether he will be eligible to run in next February's presidential election. Sonko's supporters say President Macky Sall is using the judiciary to sideline him for the vote, a charge that Saul denies. Earlier, I reached reporter Alpha Jallo in Dakar for an update on the situation.
Well, Dakar is very tense since this morning when the main opposition leader, Mr. Ousmane Sonko, this morning he's supposed to go to the court to enter charges of defamation against the former minister of youth, Mam Bai Nyang. And everything started very well until at a certain point when Mr. Sonko, his lawyers, and the security forces, when they reached a roundabout, and when the security forces, asked him to use, another route, that is where he refused to use that one, saying that there are militia somewhere at a certain point. So he wanted to go through the center of town, and there were some push and pulls. And eventually, the security forces from the rapid intervention unit, they forced him from his car and put him in one of their vehicles and then brought him to court.
How about the protesters? Were the protesters didn't want him to go to court at all? Why were they protesting?
Well, some of those who were protesting within just around the university, they said they were protesting and they were, burning tires everywhere. So you can see this black smoke, smoldering everywhere around the vicinity here. They said that because the way their leader, Ousmane Sonko, is, treated. The fact that he wanted to go to court, but earlier, even 2 days ago, he held a mega meeting in Dakar, but he said that the authorities are not going to choose for him the route he's going to use when he's going to court. He wanted to use the route through the center of the town, through the university, going to the court, and then the security forces, they designated an other route through the other way around, through using the tunnel. In fact, that is the fastest way to access to the court. But he refused, and this is the reason why people were protesting, and then his bodyguards were arrested, and he was forced and pulled out of his vehicle and then taken to court. And this is the reason what annoyed most of his, sympathizers and some of his militants, and they started, burning tires. They were running battles with the police everywhere around Dakar.
What's the status of the case? What happened when he got to court?
Yes, actually he came to court, and when he came to court, in fact, the case was going on inside the court. His lawyer, one of his principal lawyers, when he was in the podium, he said his client is quite traumatized because of the way, the manner in which he was manhandled by the security forces. And he was, just begging the court to suspend, the audience. But at the same time, they were also trying to see whether the judge can just, suspend the trial for another time. And Ousmane Sonko himself, he also, when he came to the podium, he reiterated what he said. He said that nobody could designate a route for him to come to court. And this is the reason why he insisted that he would not use the other route designated by the security forces. And then there were some heated agreement between the defense lawyers and the other lawyers of the former minister of youth, Mam Bai Nyang. And as we speak now, for almost 2 hours, the trial has been suspended.
That was reporter Alpha Jallo. He spoke with me earlier from Dakar, Senegal. Central African economy ministers are calling for investing in energy and farming as Africa's poorest region struggles to recover from natural disasters, armed conflicts, and fallout from Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Heads of state from the six nations of regional bloc CEMAC meet tomorrow to discuss the challenges. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Economy and Integration Ministers of the Central African Economic and Monetary Community, CEMAC, say most of their 55 million civilians live in abject poverty that has only been made worse by the last few years of global troubles. Ministers of the six-nation bloc, which includes Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Chad, Equatorial Guinea, Gabon, and the Republic of Congo, met Thursday in Yaoundé. President of CEMAC, Daniel Onaondo, who was born in Gabon, says Russia's invasion of Ukraine is the latest in a series of global disasters to impact the region.
La première raison, c'est pour analyser les conséquences de la guerre entre l'Ukraine.
He says the ministers' meeting strongly recommended huge investment in agriculture and energy to end our dependency on imported food and petroleum products from Russia and Ukraine. Before Russia's invasion of its neighbor, Central African states' imports from Russia and Ukraine accounted for 60% of their fuel and 80% of their wheat. Last July, Cameroon, the Central African Republic, and Gabon reported fuel shortages they blamed on disruptions from Russia's war. CEMAC says the war caused a sharp increase in prices that member states paid for fuel and fertilizers and added pressure on the region's farmers who were already struggling from conflicts and climate shocks. Ondo says armed conflicts and political unrest in the region also added to the challenge for economies to recover from the COVID-19 pandemic. Despite the setbacks, Cameroon's Minister of the Economy, Alamine Ousmane May, voiced an optimistic outlook. May is also president of CEMAC's Council of Ministers of the Economy and Integration.
Malgré les crises successives, notre communauté a su faire preuve de résilience.
He says, although Central African states face many security and environmental shocks and an influx of refugees and displaced persons, Cameroon, Chad, Equatorial Guinea, Gabon, the Central African Republic, and the Republic of Congo have shown resilience. May says the economic growth rate was maintained at 3% in 2022. He says CEMAC will always work for the interest of its people despite the challenging world economy and severe crises. The ministers said they will propose a plan for improving conditions through energy and farming when heads of state meet in Yaoundé on March 17. Ernest Molua is an economist at the Cameroon's University of Boya. He says the region's leaders should push harder for the free movement of people and goods as part of the African Continental Free Trade Area. Speaking via messaging app from Boya, he says the trade deal provides a lot of opportunities for CEMAC if the heads of state take it seriously.
The most important thing for CEMAC to improve on public infrastructure, improve on the communication and telecommunication infrastructure, improvement of roads, improvement of railway links. When this happens, then this region places itself in an advantageous position to reap the benefits that may come from the continental free trade area.
CEMAC says Friday's Heads of State Summit will focus on structural reforms to deal with the economic consequences of the COVID-19 pandemic and Russia's war on Ukraine. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The United Nations says the majority of developing nations may miss out on the economic benefits of booming green technologies that can help the world reach climate goals. A new report by the UN's Agency for Trade and Development says low emission technologies, including electric vehicles and solar and wind energy, are booming in industrialized countries and will reach a market value of over $2 trillion by the year 2030, four times higher than today. The agency is urging industrialized nations to reform existing global trade and intellectual property transfer rules to allow developing countries to access green technologies and grow their own industries. That includes Brazil's bioethanol industry and development of green hydrogen potential in Chile. Meanwhile, Russia is the world's largest producer of diamonds, but stones have faced censure from key markets due to the invasion of Ukraine, resulting in buyers turning to Botswana. From Gaborone, Botswana, reporter Mukundusi Dube has the details.
Botswana's Minister of Minerals, Lefoko Moahi, says 2022 was a good year for his country's diamond industry due to the war in Ukraine. Botswana, the world's second largest producer of the precious stones, had $5 billion in sales in 2022, up 13% from the previous year.
Rough diamond sales remained robust for the entire 2022. The positive supply and demand conditions continue to support polished price growth. The war in Russia-Ukraine created a new environment in the midstream which supported Botswana diamonds.
Moahi says sanctions on the Russian stones affected overall global diamond trading, with retailers more cautious.
Secondary rough diamond trading and polished diamond trading softened, with polished inventory increasing as the midstream became uncertain regarding how retailers would scrutinize their purchases following U.S. sanctions on Russia.
On the downside, Moahi says the demand for diamonds started to soften towards the end of 2022 due to the effect of global inflationary pressures as a result of the Ukraine-Russia conflict.
However, the persistent high rate of inflation and the global economic challenges exacerbated by the Russian-Ukraine conflict dented consumer confidence in the second half, and diamond demand subsequently started to soften at the end of 2022, although it remained positive overall for the year.
Due to the Ukraine war, Moahi says the diamond industry became more concerned about the definition of conflict diamonds.
The sanctions further led to a greater focus on provenance and supply chain transparency.
A push to classify Russia stones as conflict or blood diamonds hit a brick wall during a meeting of global diamond stakeholders held in Gaborone in November. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
And here is Mokbill Yeboro with a recap of the latest action in the Basketball Africa League tournament.
The Basketball Africa League teams are getting some rest today, with no games scheduled in Dakar, Senegal. Yesterday, Tunisia's U.S. Monastir topped Nigeria's Kwara Falcons 85-75, and Rwanda's REG sank AS Douanes from Senegal 69-55. With three wins, REG is through to the next round, and U.S. Monastir is on their way as they are 2-0 in play so far. The games will resume in the Sahara Conference of the tournament on Friday, with Abidjan taking on U.S. Monastir, and AS Douanes will go up against Mali's Stade Malien. Both teams are trying to get their second win. You can follow all the action on VOA Africa and check out our podcast, Nothing But Net, with Mukbil and Sunny, wherever you get your podcasts.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mukbil Yeboro, and our engineer tonight, Audrey Rodriguez, thanks much for choosing The Voice of America.